This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Welcome to Houston Sports Talk with your host, Robert Land.
Thanks for checking into the best Houston sports podcast. Joining me as co-host, Stephen Kerr, 65-plus years in sports journalism between the two of us. We are now part of the Believe Network. Great to be there. Great to have you guys with us. Later in the show, Astros prospect Joey Loperfido gets the call. Fromber's back. And can the Astros move Minute Maid to Mexico? But first, Stephen, the Texans. Kind of a boring draft, I guess. It was a snoozer from Trader Nick, especially after last year.
Yeah, if you compare it to last year with all the excitement of getting C.J. Stroud and then, you know, all the wheeling and dealing to move up to get Will Anderson Jr. and the, you know, the middle round draft pick trades he made, I guess it was kind of boring, Robert, when you think about it. But I also think that every draft is interesting in its own way, and a lot of it depends on the positions you're trying to fill. And, you know, obviously, if the Texans were – they were a playoff team last year. When you get to be a playoff team, I guess it becomes less interesting because you're obviously not drafting high up in the first round unless you make a trade. But yeah, it was really interesting that we're so used to the Texans having a first round pick that they didn't have one. You had to wait till the second day to find out what they were going to pick. But I think that, you know, they met most of their needs with their early picks, except maybe for one, and we'll talk about that at some point.
Yeah, we're going to get more into the picks in a second, but the Texans weekend did not stay boring, unfortunately. How scary was it, Stephen, reading about Tank Dell getting shot?
Yeah, the first time I looked at that headline, my heart just about stopped. And what I can say, Robert, and you know, there's nothing good you can really say about something like this, but there is some positive news that comes out of it. First and foremost, that nobody was killed, as far as I know. No one was killed in this shooting. They were just wounded. Second of all, that Tank Dell, yes, he was wounded, but he will make a full recovery. And he was released from the hospital, I believe it was the very next day. So talk about breathing a sigh of relief. And again, you know, something like this, you know, life trumps football any day of the week. And yes, we're very happy that Tank Dell will make a full recovery. We're just happy that he is still here among us and that, you know, his first priority, of course, is to fully recover and hopefully be back with the Texans when training camp starts.
Yeah, it's a weird last few years for Texans picks. Tank Dell, shot. DJ Horton, or is it? Yeah, it was Horton, I think.
Yeah.
Cancer. Mechie, cancer. I mean, it's like just this weird off the field stuff that you're just not expecting to deal with.
Yeah, you almost wonder, you know, does somebody have a grudge against the Texans? Do the football gods have a grudge against the Texans? They tease them a little bit, you know, become a playoff team, but then they do these weird things to draft picks. Yeah, it's kind of crazy, but boy,
that's
I'm just so glad.
Three draft picks that also, Quisenberry,
yeah.
Horton,
Quisenberry,
and Mechie.
Yeah.
We've had three of them over the years. Just so that's a lot.
Yeah, and then, of course, you have Tank getting shot. So thankfully, it just wasn't more serious than it turned out to be.
Quick heads up for everybody out there listening, by the way. Tomorrow, you're going to hear a new show with insiders who covered the Texans draft picks the last couple of years. They'll tell us about what they know about them. Haven't quite got an insider for every draft pick, but definitely the key guys. You're going to hear from some of the key guys that the Texans drafted, like experts in that area. So look forward to that if you're a fan. It's not the most exciting, but I didn't hate any of the Texans picks. And I'm not crazy excited for any of them either. It's a little bit more in the middle. Mostly I'm just happy they addressed cornerback and safety in the first three picks.
Yeah.
Remember I mentioned that. Lassiter and Bullock both excelled against elite college competition. The numbers would jump out at you. Lassiter only gave up 15 catches for 135 yards all last year. You know, that's like a Noah Woods like week with Stroud last year, and that's what he gave up the whole year. And then Bullock had 9 interceptions over 3 seasons and 2 pick sixes. So those two stats just jump out at you with those two guys.
Yeah. And, you know, it sounds like Lassiter, and he was a name that I heard mentioned on several mock drafts as far as the Texans and who they might pick either as their first or second pick. One thing that jumped out at me about Lassiter is it sounds like he's got a bit of a personality. I'm sure you saw that he wore a chain on draft day that read Locksmith Lassiter. And when he was asked about it, he said he called himself the locksmith because he prides himself on having things on lock. Yeah, get it?
But yeah, and that's the same nickname that there was a move to try to anoint Jabari Smith.
Yeah,
locksmith because of his defense, but unfortunately
didn't happen.
Jabari's defense just isn't quite good enough to be called locksmith at this point. It's,
no.
It's all right, but it's not that good.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing too, Robert, is, you know, he didn't allow a single touchdown in 2023. Opposing quarterbacks, they only completed 38.5% of the passes when he was targeted. And again, as you said, you know, he played against elite competition because, well, he's from Georgia. So, you know, you talk about the SEC and all that sort of thing. He certainly got some good competition in him. Excitement is probably too strong a word because there's so much unknown about all these picks, Robert. I mean, yeah, the scouts, of course, are going to tout them. The Texans are going to tout them. But until you get them on the field, you just don't know.
And I know some fans question drafting an offensive tackle in the third round. But, Steven, you can't forget, Titus is coming off a major injury.
Yep.
Tunsil was banged up all of last year. He has been banged up at points during his Texans career. Charlie Heck's not who I want to see out there if anything happens to those two guys. And we're talking about keeping Stroud upright. That's got to matter if you're a Texans fan.
Well, yeah, that's exactly right. And I think I even mentioned on this podcast, Robert, that it wouldn't surprise me if the Texans, if, you know, maybe not their first two picks, but, you know, apparently they did go with the second pick of their, you know, their second pick in the second round. Blake Fisher's the guy you're talking about. Offensive tackle out of Notre Dame. You know, of course, as you mentioned, thin at offensive tackle. You know, Laramie Tunsil, he's been kind of banged up. Titus Howard, he just hasn't been that durable with the signing of Hecht. And then they got David Sharp in free agency. But you just can't have enough bodies at the offensive line position considering what's been going on. And, you know, tackle one of the more important positions, as you said. And let's see, what is he? 6'5", 315 pounds. So he started at right tackle and left tackle. So he only had one game at left tackle, but he has done that. So it sounds like a guy that, you know, they can at least put him tackle to tackle if they had to.
Yeah, he's most likely their swing tackle. I think he beats out Charlie Heck and takes the job there as long as he looks halfway. I mean, it's a second-round pick. Charlie Heck is a guy that's just been kind of hanging around as a fourth-round pick, or I think it was a few years ago.
Yeah, and you know, someone else that he played with is Jarrett Patterson, you know, the center slash guard, the Texans, and he actually vouched for him in the pre-draft process. So he's at least familiar with somebody on the Texans.
Yeah, sort of mixed results from the Notre Dame guys with the Texans. I mean, we're definitely happy with Patterson so far. Not as much happy with Nick Martin, who I think was never the guy that we were hoping he would be at center. And then, you know, Lewis Nix, remember him? He was a third round pick out of Notre Dame that never took a snap in a regular season game,
right,
if I remember correctly.
That's right. So, yeah, come on. You know, it's no pressure. No pressure, Fisher, to, you know, step up and make your Notre Dame Fighting Irish proud. But in this case, the Texans really could use something like that.
Yeah, Will Fuller, I think, was a Dame or two.
Yeah, Well, and the funny thing about Fuller is, you know, if he had just been healthy, he'd been great. I mean, his health was his big issue.
Exactly. Also, the fourth round pick, Cade Sower, got to talk about it because Cario's got a huge man crush on him. He used words like elite and everything you'd want in a football player and more. Steven, if he can improve his blocking, he could be the best two-way tight end the Texans have drafted since Owen Daniels. But maybe that's not saying much, because if you forgot, here's a list of some of the guys that they've drafted since Owen. Tegan Katoriano, Haley Waring, Jordan Akins, Jordan Thomas, CJ Fedorowicz, Ryan Griffin, Garrett Graham. Stop me when you want to throw up for a second.
Yeah, he can't do much worse than those guys, right? You know, apparently he is quite a pass catcher, does need to work on his blocking. But here's the good thing, Robert. He played two seasons with CJ Stroud at Ohio State. So they were both team captains. So CJ's very familiar with them. He had 5 touchdowns. I think he had 36 catches for 406 yards. So, yeah, he does have some pass catching ability. And at the very least, he certainly is going to add some depth to a position that really, really needs some depth behind Schultz.
Absolutely. I mean, Texans tight ends, it would be nice to have somebody that could block a little bit. And he's a big guy. He's not the best blocker yet, but he's still learning the position. And he's a big guy. So that's something to keep an eye on. More on him again in our show tomorrow. So keep an eye out. We'll talk to an Ohio State, a former offensive lineman at Ohio State, that'll tell us a little bit about his blocking as well. Of the low round picks, Stephen, Louisville running back Juwan Jordan could be interesting in special teams with his return game. Two kick returns for touchdowns. Maybe the new kick return rules help him a little bit. Stephen, the guy who's most likely a steal from some draft gurus in the low rounds, Auburn defensive tackle Marcus Harris. Zuerlein projected him in the fifth round, not the seventh round where they got him. He had 7 sacks last year as a tackle. Again, he's a tackle at Auburn with 7 sacks. That's pretty good. It's a player maybe too small for some defensive gurus out there, but might be perfect for DeMeco.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you were talking about Jordan. That's one of the things they mentioned is the new kickoff rules. It might be one of the reasons that they took a chance on him. If he could be, you know, next in line as the third down back, of course, depending on what happens with Damian Pierce, you know, he could go in on, say, a third down situation, you know, things like that. And he's actually going to be 25 when the season begins, Robert. So he's a little bit older. I don't know if that's good, bad, or not. But he did rush for 1,128 yards, 181 carries, 13 touchdowns in his final season at Louisville. You know, then you were talking about the defensive tackle.
Right.
Yeah. So that is a need that I know the Texans would have liked to have addressed at the very, you know, at the outset of the draft.
They tried to get somebody.
Nick did admit that he made some phone calls, even on the first night, I think, to try to get something done. So, yeah, he may be a guy that's going to take a little time to develop. I don't know. You may not see him as a whole lot the first season, but you never know. I mean, he could run out into somebody that could eventually fill that need.
While I didn't hear a lot of excitement, Stephen, about the draft picks from, you know, the Texans fans on social media, I mean, there was interest, and I feel like they, you know, might have like, oh, this guy's kind of all right. This, you know, there wasn't like jumping for joy that we've seen with some of the picks over the years about, oh, this guy, that's, you know, everybody was excited, obviously, about getting Will Anderson last year, yeah. Stroud, even Tank Dell was a big deal because he was a local guy. But the thing that I noticed, Stephen, is while, you know, you could say I'm a little disappointed that there's not these guys that I'm necessarily excited about, I didn't hear people saying, yeah, but they should have drafted this guy. There wasn't that one guy that everybody thought, oh, they missed out. At least I didn't notice it anyway.
No, I haven't heard anything like that either. And that's pretty unusual, Robert, because almost every year there's always someone that you jump in and say, man, why didn't you trade up to get this guy? Or, you know, he was there when your pick came up. Why didn't you pick him? And I think, I mean, a lot of it too is, you know, winning does a lot of that. It kind of cures some of those things. Yeah, you're always going to have a naysayer. Even if you win the Super Bowl, there's always going to be somebody to criticize your free agent signings or draft picks. But yeah, I mean, I think the Texans addressed, as I said, most of the needs that they did. And we'll, of course, find out when training camp starts and regular season starts, who's going to make it, who's not, and who's going to jump out at you and surprise you, and who's going to do as expected.
Yeah, there was a couple of cornerbacks I did hear people wanting them to get in the second round that just didn't last that far. And they were like, oh, we should have traded up. Well, but Caserio did try to trade up, just wasn't successful. I mean, I think he saw what was going on. There was that big run of cornerbacks before they did draft Lassiter. But he, you know, he seems very confident in what Lassiter can do. So I just don't hear a lot of noise about, well, there was this guy picked 2 picks later and he was the guy, you know, there's just not, I don't just.
Well, you know, it also depends on how deep the position is. You know, as you said, the cornerback position was pretty deep. So, you know, they have more than one guy on their board that they like. So if you don't get one guy, well, you go to the next guy. You know, Lassiter, as I said, was a name that was mentioned as the primary cornerback that the Texans would choose in the mock draft. So I don't think they were that far off base. Now, if it was a very thin, you know, number of players at that position, then you might have to see some more room for criticizing or trying to trade up. But yeah, it's not like Caserio didn't try to trade up, as we said.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
It's the Kia Summer Sticker Sales Event, so give your friends something to look at. Like a B&B with an ocean view, an endless field of wildflowers, or a sunset that needs no filter. Make this a summer to share and save with a capable Kia SUV or powerful sedan. See your local Kia dealer or visit Kia.com to learn more. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-334-KIA for details. Always drive safely. Sale applies to purchase of specially tagged 2024 vehicles only. Quantities are limited. Must take delivery by 7/8/24.
Now, we were talking about some of the bad tight ends the Texans took over the years, and I was trying to think, what's going to be my transition from the Texans to the Astros? And so I went with this one, Stephen. Forrest Whitley is so snake bit that Benny Joppru feels sorry for him. Do you remember Joppru?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. I mean, how many times did he get injured?
Oh, he never set
he never saw the field.
Yeah, that was crazy. Second round pick, tight end, never saw the field, and Forrest Whitley just can't get out of his own way. My other option for the Texans to Astros transition is Jose Abreu, kind of like the Astros signed Ed Reed to a 3-year contract.
Yeah, I'd say so. Although, how much did Ed Reed even get on the field? He did briefly, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
Ed Reed played. It was just not.
But he didn't last the season, I don't think. He didn't even last one season. But yeah, I think that's a pretty close resemblance. Now, the thing about Forrest Whitley, Forrest Whitley does have one thing on Joppru, and that is he did see one game of big league action. So he just barely eked it out over Joppru, but either one of those transitions would work, Robert. So Jose Abreu getting, of course, optioned not to AAA, not to AA, not even to high A, but to rookie league level ball. And obviously, you know, what they do there is it's more instructional. It's in the Florida Gulf Coast League. And that is for him to work on his hitting. And just a lot of things that need to be addressed, as you can obviously tell by the numbers. So that is where Jose Abreu is going to be as of Wednesday.
Yeah, we're recording this Tuesday afternoon, so it is prior to Tuesday night's game. But Dana Brown saying basically, quote, they want to get some at-bats for Abreu and his timing back right. Meanwhile, Joey Loperfido brings his paella and his 13 home runs to Houston. He's playing outfield with Chaz banged up. If you missed it, Chaz is not doing real well health-wise right now. In Sugarland, Loperfido struck out one out of every four plate appearances, Stephen, but if he can hit anywhere near his Sugarland 1106 OPS, if I read that right,
1.106. Yep, you got it.
We'll take it.
Yeah, we'll take it. Certainly. And I know from what I've heard, at least as the season, the early part of the season progressed, he did seem to get better as far as the strikeout ratio. It was pretty alarming there at the beginning. It was either a home run or a strikeout. And he does have a left-handed bat. And you know, what's funny is Dana Brown said to him, because they're both from New Jersey, he said, make New Jersey proud. So no pressure, Joey. No pressure at all. Just come in, you know, take over first base or, you know, play the outfield every once in a while and hit a bunch of home runs. But, yeah, he's going to be making his debut on Tuesday. Of course, we're recording this before the game. He'll bat seventh in the lineup, play left field on Tuesday. And John Singleton, nope, we still haven't gotten rid of John Singleton. He will be at first base batting eighth. So, you know, I think as much as the fact that they were going to do something with Jose Abreu, but also the fact that Chaz is banged up. Those two things, you know, kind of accelerated the process of Joey being called up, because I'm pretty sure the plan was to at least wait until June and see how things were. But obviously, things are more of a dire need than the Astros thought they would be when the season started.
He's played first base in 7 of his 25 starts in Sugarland, which, you know, it's not like they're really efforting hard to get him first base at bats at this point, but they did make sure to at least get him in almost a fourth of the games or so. He did play 63 games, Stephen, at first base his freshman year at Duke, but that's been a few years now.
It's been a while, and it's not like major league first base. But I do think it's smart, Robert, that if they are going to give him time at first base, A, they're not going to just throw him out there on his debut, You know, let him at least play a position he's familiar with, and be, you know, that he can just kind of seg into that, get some more practice, and not game practice, but practice. So I think it was smart that they're just kind of, they're bringing him up, letting him play left field, since there is a need there at the moment, and batting him seventh in the lineup, so there's not a huge amount of pressure for him. I mean, you're certainly not going to put him near the top of the order.
Yeah, the nickname that everybody seems to keep using is J-Lo or whatever.
Joe Cooks. It's already ingrained in, what is it, his Instagram page that he has? It's pretty easy.
Yeah, Joe Cooks, maybe Paella Power. I like Paella Power.
That's good too. Yeah, J-Lo, I mean, that's old. You know.
Yeah, let's get rid of it. I'm tired of the one initial and the two, two things and the second word or adding, whatever. Also this weekend, kind of a good weekend for the Astros. They played well in Mexico. Can the Astros play their home games in Mexico? It's the first time this year, Stephen, they look like the real Astros instead of some generic knockoff brand that, you know, maybe came from a bad Chinese shipped over stuff, you know, or whatever.
Yeah. Well, I'm wishing that we could just make Minute Maid Park like the Mexico stadium that they were in and somehow simulate, you know, the air conditions and all that kind of thing where the ball, you know, will be hit out further. But then, of course, remember, you know, our pitchers, they're going to give up home runs too. So I'm not sure how that would work. But, man, something. I mean, look, the Colorado Rockies are not a good team. But you know what? It doesn't matter. The Astros need some kind of injection of confidence. And if it comes against a team that is about as bad as they are in conditions where, you know, almost anybody could hit a home run, you and I could probably hit it, you know, at least 300 feet in that ballpark, Robert, maybe, then take it. And we'll find out. You know, they got a series with the Guardians coming up, and the Guardians are pretty tough. Their pitching's been really good this year. But man, if the Astros could just string together some wins, more than two in a row, which, you know, they've done before. I think they beat the Rangers two straight. But then they just went right back to where they were. So we just got to see if they can string out some more wins, get some confidence. And look, they're not that far out of first place. I mean, come on, as ridiculous as it may sound, they could take over the division, Robert, at some point if they just had a run going. And if the Rangers just, you know, keep kind of going hem and haw like they have been, I don't think the Astros would be able to make a wild card spot at this stage of the race, even though that's still early too. But it's not that far-fetched to think that the division is at least within their reach.
Yeah, it helped also this weekend that Fromber looked pretty good in his return to the rotation. At least you have two aces now in Fromber and Verlander back on the mound.
Yeah, and of course, with Fromber being a ground ball pitcher, you know, even when he isn't at his best, he still gets those ground balls, and he didn't give up. It was only one home run that Colorado hit during that two-game series. Therefore, the pitchers definitely bore down to give up as many home runs as we thought they would. But Fromber, he didn't walk anybody, if I'm not mistaken, Robert. I don't think he had any walks. So he definitely looked better than I expected him to coming back from an injury like this. You just have to always wonder, once he's had that issue, are they going to have to be careful with him if he has it again? And Christian Javier hopefully will come back soon. So maybe the tide is starting to turn a little bit.
That's the thing you mentioned that we forget about. The Astros pitching staff has always been good with control the last few years. It's sort of an underrated problem that they've been having this year is the walks.
Yeah, boy, especially at the beginning of the season. What was it, the opening day game against the Yankees, man, they had what, 9 walks, and Fromber had, I think, 6 of them. So, you know, you just don't want to walk a batter. Just too many bad things can happen when you walk a batter. Whether you're leading off an inning, whether you get 2 outs and trying to get that 3rd out, it doesn't matter. So if they can cut down on the walks and get better at their control and just locate their pitches, you know, J.P. France, you know, we need to mention him. You know, he got sent down to Sugarland. Not really surprising about that because he just can't seem to find his control either.
Yeah, I mean, it's another interesting move that they made because, you know, you thought, oh, Spencer Arrighetti might be the guy after, you know, France pitched well all of last year, but France has been so bad and Arrighetti not exactly rolling, but he looks better when you compare him to France, I guess.
Well, yeah, and he didn't pitch badly. In fact, he pitched in that first game of the Colorado series and he was the one, he only gave up that one home run. And I think he only gave up one other run the rest of the game. He seems to look a little better each time out. And don't forget, you know, he hadn't pitched that much in AAA. He pitched somewhat there last year. His ERA was a little bit high. You know, he's still trying to figure things out. So I think they're probably going to be a little more patient with him. With France, you know, here's the thing. J.P. France is who he is. I don't know that he's ever going to be any better than he has been, even when he's been at his best. His stuff just, it has to be on point, Robert. He's not electric. So he's got to work with finesse and he's got to have good command. Otherwise, it's just not going to happen for him.
Yeah, you want to talk about a starter that's doing his job? Let's go to Ronel Blanco. Look at what he's done over five starts. 1.65 ERA, 0.92 whip, 144 batting average against. Oh, yeah, no-hitter. Forgot about that. 30 yeah. Ks and 14 walks. If somebody would have told me this a month ago, that Ronel Blanco is doing all this stuff, and the Astros are still a disaster, just a total disaster for a pitching staff, I'd say, what kind of nutcase are you? And get that fake time machine out of here.
Yeah, well, I don't think Dana Brown is surprised, because, boy, he's been lauding him for the last couple of years. And by the way, I stand corrected. It was Ronel Blanco who pitched that first game in the Colorado series, so my mistake. So, you know, he only gave up that one home run. So he looks good. You know, even when he gets in a little bit of trouble, he worked his way out of it and is just pitching dynamite. And, yeah, we're all a little surprised. I think that he's made the strides that he has, but I guess Dana Brown's not, because, boy, he sure has been lauding him as the next big thing as a starter. And that's why, you know, they worked on him last year, sending him to AAA to be a starter. Well, he's reaping the benefits right now. I mean, it's a long season, but you can't complain about the way he's pitched so far.
Unbelievable. Blanco is throwing Blancos. I mean, he's just throwing blanks out there. And Blanco means white. I know.
Blanks, Blanc, whatever.
Yeah, same just difference. Trying to work it a little bit. Last thing I thought we would hit on is the Dusty Baker effect. Stephen, there's a thing called the Dusty Baker effect.
Well, there is. And John Shea of the San Francisco Chronicle actually did a pretty neat article that the Houston Chronicle reprinted in Monday's edition. And Robert, we've talked about this before, okay? You know, I think when Dusty was hired, and just about everywhere he's been hired, this comes up. Dusty Baker, he comes onto a team, takes a team, makes it better, and then as soon as he leaves, the team goes sour and doesn't make the playoffs. So, yeah, you know, we've been pointing fingers at this player and that player and Dana Brown and maybe some of it at Espada and some of it at Fromber and some of it at Bregman and so forth. They're not the reason the Astros are struggling, Robert. The big problem is the ghost of Dusty's past. Look, when he went to the Giants, they went from 72 wins to 103. Then he bolted after, you know, they went to the 2000 World Series and lost. The Giants didn't win another playoff game until the championship era started, and that was in 2010. He goes from the Cubs. They go from 67 wins to 88 wins in his first year, reached their first NLCS since 1989. But the next playoff win, the 2016 World Series run, Dusty wasn't there. The Reds, 90-loss team when Dusty comes over. They make the playoffs three times in 4 years, but oops, they haven't won a playoff game since then. First season in Washington, they improved, 12-game improvement, won 95, 97 games. Well, Dusty left, and yeah, they'd win the World Series, but it was a little while after that. So there's your proof, Robert.
Wow. Yeah, it's it's pretty amazing. Either he gets out just when things are about to go bad as far as talent, guys are falling over the hill or whatever, or there's the other option of maybe Dusty knows what he's doing as a manager, guys out there that hated on Dusty for the last few years.
Well, it may be a little of both. I mean, you think that, you know, Dusty's a pretty smart guy. I mean, let's be straight. You know, no matter what you think of him or his lineups or, you know, how he makes his pitching moves and so forth, he's a smart guy. And maybe he just figures, you know, I just need to be in a place for so long. And after that, it's going to get stale on both sides. Or in some cases, you can see that some things are kind of ebbing away. You know, he and Dana Brown didn't exactly get along, and that played into it. But it is kind of ironic that every time he left a team, they went sour.
Yeah, it's a pretty incredible story. And, you know, I just wish him the best of luck and want to see more Dusty out there and doing
Absolutely.
Stuff, because he's a fun guy to keep an eye out on. And, you know, I was watching what was going on this weekend, Stephen, on social media. And one of the things that happened this weekend, I don't know if you caught this, but the Rolling Stones were in Houston. And, you know, I just think of this because Dusty's one of those guys that he knows everybody. So he probably knows Mick Jagger. Mick Jagger gets some shots around Houston. And I'm like, man, he was all around me and I just must have missed it or whatever. I was in the wrong space. But he got his big, you know, big photo in front of that huge, massive, like two-story or whatever, however big it is, armadillo in front of the Armadillo Palace over by the Good Company.
Oh, man. Yeah. And, you know, I live in Austin and I haven't been in Houston. You know, I lived in Houston before I moved here. It's been a long time since I've been there, Robert, and I've never been to that place. But it's, yeah, I did hear about the Stones being in town there. And, you know, with all the hobnobbing Dusty was doing with this celebrity and that celebrity and the other after the Astros won the World Series. Oh, I'm sure, you know, I'm sure Mixon is Rolodex somewhere.
Yeah. And of course, we need to get our pitchers to do the old, is it in the Rolling Stones did Paint It Black?
Paint It Black. Yep. That's it. Paint It Black.
Yeah. I got to get them to do that a little bit more.
Absolutely. And it would go a long way.
Well, hopefully we'll talk about some more Astros wins. I hope that it just doesn't end with the Mexico series, but looking forward to that. Looking forward to our Texan show tomorrow. I can't wait to.
Yeah, that's going to be awesome.
Yeah, you guys are going to love that one. And we'll talk some Rockets here pretty soon. I need to get some Rockets people on the docket. But have a good one, everybody, and we'll talk to you again soon.
You're listening to Houston Sports Talk.
Hey, don't forget to support us by subscribing and commenting on YouTube. You can always listen to us on Spotify, Apple, or your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends about us and share our show links on social media. Spread the word, everybody. Thanks for listening.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.